This time of year, you're going to find me jigging for crappies off my father-in-law's boat, celebrating a successful turkey hunt, or just sitting on the back deck watching time go by with a quality cigar from Thompson Cigar. Thompson Cigar has been around since 1915, offering the widest array of cigars and cigar accessories at very affordable prices. Thompson Cigar offers your favorite brands like Swisher Sweets, Cohiba, Backwoods, and Monte Cristo shipped fresh directly to your door. Also, be sure to check out their 5-pack fever deals and join their value club for big savings. Visit thompsoncigar.com and enter the discount code SE at checkout for 20% off of all orders over $75. Thompson Cigar, quality cigars at affordable prices. You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable. Since 1988, Whitetail Institute has been perfecting annual and perennial seed products specifically for hunters who plant food plots. Their seeds have been engineered to be palatable, high in protein, and extremely attractive to deer. Whether you live in the Deep South or Midwest farm country, they have products that will help you grow your best food plot yet. For more information about their seeds and their blends, visit whitetailinstitute.com. Enter the discount code SE15 for 15% off.
Spring break isn't what it used to be. It's better. This spring, stay 3 nights and get a $50 Best Western gift card. Life's a trip. Make the most of it at Best Western. Visit bestwestern.com for complete terms and conditions.
Welcome to Maximize Your Hunt, the podcast dedicated to those who want the most out of their hunting property. This podcast explores land management, habitat improvement, and hunting strategies that will help you maximize your time in the field. Follow along as industry professionals that live and breathe white-tailed deer share their secrets to success. And now, the founder of Whitetail Landscapes, your host, John Teeter.
Hi, I'm John Teeter, Whitetail Landscapes. This is Maximize Your Hunt. Welcome back, everybody. Hopefully everybody's doing well. I'm home with my kids today, so if you hear any rambling in the background, it's them. We've been busy this morning making pancakes and just kind of enjoying our Friday. I'm on travel coming up here for the next couple weeks. I'm traveling, and then I'm on vacation. I got some time off, so I'm going to basically be living in Vermont for about a week and enjoying that, and then back on the road with clients. So that's pretty much it for me coming up. We're going to get right into it today. I've kind of got things going on this afternoon, and I'm a little bit busy with a project that I got to work on, and I'm working on some client drawings this evening. So it's just the way it goes. All right, we got Jake Blowback from Habitat Pro. He's going to talk about some various topics that he's been just observing in landscape, some client projects that he's got working on. We'll probably talk a little bit about ponds, some specific details around some design things that he's really focused on right now with his clients. So let me get him on the line. Hey, Jake, how are you doing?
Hey, doing pretty well there, John. Thank you.
Good, good. Welcome back to the show. What's been going on with you?
Oh, let's see. This time of year, it's a lot of infrastructure. You know, you have to go when the large machine guy says, hey, you know, we're done with this project. We're moving on to yours now. So unfortunately, that leads to, myself having to go in a lot of different directions. So I was a couple of hours away from my house for 5 days with a dozer and an excavator and putting in, we put in, I think, 8 little nugget plots, a couple of larger plots, had fires going to burn stuff, you know, just a lot of infrastructure on 1,100 acres. And, you know, then you come back and you go to a follow around a big mulcher, you know, in a timber harvest area where we're going to do some self-facing burn slopes in the future. But the aspen is kind of, you know, taking over. So we're knocking it all down again. Yeah, just and then of course we're going to rip into food plot season here. So
yeah, well, you know, yeah. I want to start off talking a little bit about the project that you were on recently. You said with an excavator and a dozer. Let's talk a little bit about some of the specifics. Like, why don't you explain, you know, what you were using the dozer for versus the excavator, as well as, you know, what are the projects that you were trying to get finalized through that 5-day period?
Sure. Well, the first part of that whole gig was, you know, of course, the design. You know, there's a lot of, I think guys are starting to realize that it, you know, just like building a house, you know, because all these properties we have, it's different across the country, of course, but the value of property now, when you break it down per acre, just with, you know, with it, with land being such a good investment, really doesn't ever go backwards. You know, it's just as expensive as building a house when you build a deer hunting property, you know, so you're not going to build a house by just showing up one day and starting to build the bathroom, you know, right? Which is, you know, unfortunately, a lot of guys treat their deer hunting properties where they just kind of see a video and then say, hey, this weekend, do you want to go put in a food plot in that one little open area? And, you know, it might do okay, but it might also be in the total wrong spot, or, you know, it just might not help as much as they think. And it's always better to work with a coordinated plan. So the front end was, of course, touring the place for, you know, 1,100 acres. It takes you a week to tour it just to see it all. And building stuff according to the topo is big. And, you know, that's wolf country on top of that. So you're doing things a little bit different in wolf country than you do in, you know, Iowa or southern Minnesota even. So it's one of those things where that whole piece, you know, came together first. You got the map done. Okay, this is how it's going to be based on how the guy likes to hunt and how much time they're going to spend there. And then, okay, well, you know, what's the best way to get this infrastructure put in? Because the only thing that's been done is logging, and, you know, logger's job is just to get the timber out. That's how they, you know, that they put in their roads so that they can get the timber out efficiently. They're not necessarily in the right spots, and they don't necessarily always help hunters access around the property in a way that keeps them separate from the prey animal they're trying to kill. So, you know, it's one of those things where you kind of have to start there. And then once they find out, oh yeah, it's going to be, you know, you got 10 little nugget food plots on here. What's the best way to get those in? And it's, some of them are in the harvested area and some of them are in the big tree areas. Well, you know, a dozer with a root rake is usually the way to go. And if you've got, we had one plot where we were going to, we helped the landowner pick out a spot for the cabin just based on some of the unique features. You know, he had some big white pine and big Norway pine that are probably going to live for another 100 years, and they're just beautiful, and he'll probably never harvest them. So we wanted to get the cabin somewhat near those, and it just presented an opportunity where if you're going to put that much, you know, you're going to put $500,000 into a cabin, you kind of want to look at deer out of the cabin because that's why you own the place. So yep. He jumped on board with, you know, I flew the idea of this little valley that he had near the cabin. And I said, you know, if we put a fairly large destination food source right down there, which we're going to do at somewhere on the property anyway, we got to get deer moving in some direction based on, you know, that's kind of that micro or that macro. Hey, where's the food going to be? Where are they going when everybody gets up out of the woods? Which direction are they going? You know, we're going to put that somewhere. And I just floated it past them. Hey, you know, if you're building your cabin here, well, why don't we, do you want to just, like, do you want to be able to sit on the deck by the fire pit and just look at a food plot, you know, through security? I mean, we left him, he's got a lot of hazel brush in Minnesota. You know, you got hazel is pretty common in the understory in some of our sandy ground up north. So he's still got the hazel there. You know, he might have to be on the second level to see into that food plot, but, you know, he's got some stuff there that he can look at. It's not like he's just, you know, can only see deer when he goes to the deer stand in the fall. So that's oftentimes not why guys want to put the money into a property. They oftentimes want, they love wildlife, so they want to see wildlife when they're at the cabin or in the backyard or out hunting. So a lot of that, you know, he was on board with. And the excavator was had a thumb bucket. So we were taking down pole aspen that was in the 4 to 6 inch range, you know, 50 years from timber harvest quality. And just, you would not believe, I'll have some on my social media that, you know, that I took so much video this week, my phone won't be able to get backed up for months until I get all that off of there. But it is unbelievable to see, you know, you look at the price tag, right? They're like the, a good price, I will say, to get a dozer on site. You know, you're going to pay probably $1,000 just mobilization to get it there. And then, okay, if I'm going to pay that to get it there, you know, I don't want to bring them in to do an acre food plot and then say, hey, you know, that's enough for now. Let's bring you back next year and do another, you know, cause you're going to pay the $1,000 every time he comes back. So, right. This owner's kind of investment minded. And he just said, you know, once you get them there, just get the infrastructure done, please. You know, so dozer excavator on site every single day, you know, running all day long, 10 hours a day, you know, a pretty good price is going to be $2,000 to $2,500 per machine. So you're dropping $4,000 to $5,000 every single day that they're on site working. And, you know, so you want to, when you start looking at that price tag, it's kind of a shock, but at the same time, if you've ever been on a property where they're working, you just go, oh geez. Yeah. That's, I understand now that this is a good investment, because holy crap, can they get some work done? There's no replacement for horsepower and that stuff. I could not believe what the excavator, and those guys all know what they're doing, right? Yeah, like I said, this is what needs to happen. What's the best way to do it? And they said, well, we're going to put the excavator over here on the pole aspen, because he's just going to grab them with the thumb bucket, snap them off, throw them in the pile, and then the dozer can roll the piles up together. And you can light them on fire as soon as you're ready, you know, once we're working in a different part of the plot, and we'll just keep fluffing the pile with the excavator. And like those guys, when they're good, in 5 days, we got just the list of stuff we got done spanning a mile and a half on 1,100 acres was 8 nugget food plots near bedding areas, near timber harvest areas that will guide movement in all of those areas make them huntable.
Jake, what's the size of the food plots roughly total?
When I guess that's my terminology. I guess when I say nugget, it's like the, I always put in some kind of a perennial food source near bedding area cover that supports the bedding area. So I want a doe family to have her assigned food plot, so to speak, or a buck to have his assigned food plot near his bedding, his preferred bedding, so that he doesn't have to fight any nasty bully, you know, doe that's dominating our only clover plot or our only whatever. So we got, you know, there's going to be more food plots than that, but when we're talking those, when I say nugget, I'm talking about like, you know, maybe a quarter acre, not even, you know, but a dozer can flip that out, you know, go in there. Okay. It's big trees. Where are we going to put the stuff? Well, I don't really care. As long as you leave, that end open, and that end open, that's where my travel corridors are going to hub into this little plot. The dozer's done with that plot, even with 12 inch trees in it, he's done with that plot and it's stumped and all the trees are off in 90 minutes. You know, like that would take 90 minutes with a chainsaw just to get him dropped and limbed so that I can grab it all with a skid steer and move it off the plot. I don't even know that I would be done cutting the trees down in 90 minutes. You know what I mean? Like, that's if I have my buddy come in who's a tree guy with his 500 eye and rip, you know, like, there's no substitute for horsepower, you know, when you're talking about, let's just get the infrastructure in so that the property is running. So we did 7 of those food plots. 8. I added one on the last day just when the guys were moving fast enough. And I saw the opportunity that we could get that one done as well. But 8 nuggets like that. And then we extended, I was telling you about the aspen plot. We extended from a third of an acre up to 2.5 acres. That's the destination food up by his cabin. And then we had another plot that was harvested, aspen, red maple, and a little bit of oak was harvested out of there. Not much, but a little bit of the ones that were dead or dying. You know, we have a lot of that going on in northern Minnesota right now with the red oak and the bur oak. We got something going on, but anyways, they harvested that out, and that was another full acre. So we have now 3.5 acres of destination food and 8 little nuggets scattered around the property in the appropriate topographical places that really pinch deer movement down. And we got all that done in a week. So now in 1 week, we're ready. You know, 1 week, the infrastructure is in. The yep. trees are out of the way. You know, and that's just one of those things where, yeah, it's going to cost this guy probably $25,000, you know, but it's 1,100 acres. You know, if you buy 1,100 acres, you probably know what you're doing with money. So he had this set aside for building the place. And that's something that he wanted to pull the trigger on and just, you know, not do it piecemeal, you know, not one here, one there, you know, okay, that's enough for this season. Cause of course he's trying to hunt three or four guys on it. Well, you know, you don't just want to put in one food plot if you're trying to hunt three or four guys on it in the big woods of northern Minnesota. So, you know, and then of course, like for me, it's not like I was busy the entire time, but I had to be there the entire time, right? So I had to be there for a week, even though the dozer guy and the excavator guy, they had to talk to me for 10 minutes at a time. And then I would say, okay, do this. You're going to drive here. I want you to kick the stuff to this side. This needs to be our tractor road, but you know, I want you to put in a little wrinkle in the road so that deer in the plot can't see out to the hunter access road because they're going to be driving e-bikes out here. You know, it's not that I'm not doing anything on the property for 10 hours in a row, but every 90 minutes, the guys in the machine have to talk to me to say, okay, I see it on the map, but where am I driving? When I get in there, what am I doing with it? So the macro trims down to the micro, you know, and you have to make those little decisions that the guy in the machine is awesome in the machine, but he doesn't realize that the bow stand is right over here. So I need you to lay down three big trees, roots and all, right here. And I want the butt ends of those root balls at 25 yards because that's where I need the deer to come in.
Yep.
You know, that's just kind of the details where, you know, the owner just with, I don't know, I suppose kind of interview, you probably get the same thing when your clients call you is they understand from watching all your content, all your YouTube, all your Facebook, they understand that you can plan it out macro, you know, there should be deer bedding here if I need to hunt here. So if we put food over here and they move this way, they'll have to move right by us and we can get in and out. You know, that's macro. But then to trim it down to actually doing the project, you know, being on site and saying with a mulcher, with a dozer, with an excavator, with a, you know, whatever machine you want to use or just doing it with hand tools. Okay, this is the spot. That is your bow stand. So this is your moment right here. This is the kill spot. So you're going to put whatever it happens to be, you know, we need a deer pond here. We need the grapevine licking branch. Oh, look, we found a bur oak. Don't touch this. We need this, you know, bur oak licking branch to be at this height right here at this moment. You know, that's going to be where, you know, your bucks stage up before going into this bigger plot. You know, a lot of that stuff you do find on the initial tour, but then there's a lot of it you find when you're there. You know, I was 800 yards away from the excavator and he called me from the other side of the property and said, you know, hey, how many of these, I'm in this aspen, we're ripping it out. You know, how many of these oaks do you want me to leave in here? I mean, there's, I could leave them all. We could and you know, at that moment you're like, dude, I thought that was all aspen in there. You know, you can't, when you're up there touring the place to design it, you can't walk every single spot and do a timber assessment. You're designing the macro. You're saying, okay, we're going to put bedding here because you're going to hunt here. And this is going to be the plot because you have to walk this way. So he calls me and says, hey, there's a bunch of oak in here. You know, I don't know what you want me ripping out. You know, what am I going to get yelled at for? You know, so I had to drive all the way back over across the property to the excavator to say, let's leave that oak and that oak. Rip out the rest because, you know, it's when you have red oak scattered throughout an entire property of 1,100 acres, there's enough red oak.
Yeah.
Okay. You don't need it where you're going to put in a 2.5 acre destination food plot. If you go leaving all the red oaks, you're not going to grow any food. So the point of the destination food plot is destination food. yeah, you can leave a few acorn trees, but you know, if you leave them all, going to be nice big canopies. Well, they're going to, you know, they're not going to let anything grow underneath them. So it's just one of those things where it was good that I was on site, because I obviously had to go look at that, you know, and that kind of thing, which is, like I said, that's the part of, maybe you're the same way, but I almost enjoy the build more than the hunt at this stage, where your brain just knows what to do, but you need to be on site in order to see it. You know, you need to, like, okay, I see this. This is what's going to happen if we do it this way. So, you know, big machine guy, please be the muscles and make it happen. You know, that's the fun part for me is the design to the build. And okay, now, you know, hopefully, you know, down the road, not too far, it'll be, hey, Jake, you know, that plot you designed right there, that here's the deer we harvested out of it. You know, that's obviously always the fulfillment of the whole deal when that comes all the way back around.
Yeah. There's another piece of this too, is like, you know, you have the vision, and I agree with you. Like, this piece of implementing is probably the best piece of it, because you're fine tuning everything. You get these clients out there that, you know, you give them a plan, they go to do the work and they're lost. They don't realize the magnitude of what they're doing. Break. The other thing that starts to get me a little bit, you know, left is I'll have clients, and I've got a client from 3-4 years ago and calls me every year. Hey, this is what I'm working on. This is what I'm working on. I had a chance to go back and look at his project. It was as a replan, because he wanted to fine tune it. He didn't do 80% of the stuff that I asked him to do. And you're sitting there saying, boy, if you just had me come back every year, you just spent all this time and money not doing it correctly. And we could be done. I could be 100 times ahead. You would have saved, and we would have been far further ahead. And it's just like, I get a little bit lost in that, because the translation isn't there, and they have this mindset. It's do it yourself. There's a lot of those folks, and I'm one of those folks sometimes as well, but there's going to be failures along the way. I've got 3 questions for you. One, I want to talk a little bit about wolves, just because that's a hot topic and something, you know, how to deter wolves on the landscape. You'd be very brief about that. Second topic I want to talk about is, you know, the camp that you had put in, the cabin, you're trying to give it, you know, this feel, this allure, this just, this atmosphere of just, you know, hunting, right? And so you have that destination food plot somewhere, you know, adjacent to that. What's the relative distance of that? And just how did you, you know, you think through that? And the last question I had was, when you're using the big equipment afterwards, you know, you've got all this remediation activity that happens. You've got heavy equipment. Timing's got to be right. Like, you got to go when it's hot, right? But if you had rain and wet areas, there's a lot of things that come with that. That's a negative that you kind of have to work through. So I think timing's everything when it comes to heavy equipment. Like you said, the muscle saves time, but it also, if it's not done correctly, can create more complications. And that's going to happen on any job. You could have the best laid plans, and timing could seem perfect, and you get a rainstorm and you have a washout area. There's things that you have to correct. So let's maybe walk back to the wolves, distance the camp, and then, like, just maybe diagnose any problems you had with heavy equipment.
Sure. Yep. Well, on the wolf piece, you know, it's a hot topic, just because, you know, there's obviously politics involved. I first kind of started really researching what that was when I saw a news segment with Tom Gable, who leads the Voyager Wolf Project in northern Wisconsin. And of course, you can't present everything in a little 2-minute news segment, but the idea was on the NBC affiliate out of Duluth, Minnesota. The idea of what they were presenting was, where did all the wolves go? You know, where did the deer go? Sorry. Hunter frustration grows in the Minnesota Northwoods. That was the presentation. And then, of course, they, you know, got to get the wolf expert in there. And what they presented as data was, I actually have his direct quotes, because I called him based on his direct quotes. I was like, there's no way this guy said this. If he knows, there's no way. So his direct quotes were, Voyager Wolf Project most surprising research shows when wolf numbers are highest, deer hunters tend to have the most success. Therefore, wolf density and hunter success are going to be positively correlated. That was proven true all 3 years, 2012 to 2014, that wolf hunting was legal in Minnesota. So if killing wolves is supposed to help hunter success, deer hunter success, why did hunter success go down in those years, 2012 through 2014, because it followed a harsh winter. Okay, that was what was presented. So I was like, there's no way this guy said this, because he's making it sound like if there's more wolves, deer hunters do better. So I called him, and I called him out. I was like, is that what you said? Because is that what you said? You know, I started off with that, and I was just like, there's no way you said that out loud and thought this is what the data shows, right? And he said, well, you know, I only do interviews, and I only present the research that we know. And then the person who does the interview is going to cut it however they want to cut it. And I said, but these are your quotes. I mean, I took them right off the news program, you know. And so anyways, then we went into this. I mean, I talked to them for 2 hours, you know, about, you know, what they do, how many cameras they run, how many packs they got collars on up there, you know, that like all kinds of stuff. And I probably should have done a whole podcast on the thing, because the guy was great. I mean, he knows his stuff. But the thing where, and I use the words macro versus micro a lot with clients and just with my teaching, is because a lot of times it does come down to you have to know both, right? So while this guy's research is correct that wolf numbers go up when deer numbers go up because wolves eat deer, like, you know, predator-prey relationship, duh. More wolf pups are going to survive when there's a lot of deer around. Yeah, you're correct. But when your news program or your quote try to suggest that then you get to draw this 2 + 2 = 5 correlationship with if wolves go up, then hunters do better, you're trying to make that into a macro argument. That is not the macro. This isn't a macro argument. Hunters aren't pissed off because of the macro numbers. Hunters are pissed off because they bought the property for $250,000. They pay $3,000 in taxes on it every year. They put in $2,000 worth of food plots just to feed deer, just to feed turkeys. They trap beavers so they can get into their property. They're putting huge amounts of time and money into the economy. I mean, we've done the study in Minnesota. I'm sure New York has as well, but we've done the studies on how much money hunters put directly back into the economy. Okay. So there's no arguing that because of hunters, nobody is doing more for wildlife than hunters are. Nobody can say that. You know, you can't say that the metro people that are liking PETA posts on Facebook or whatever they're not directly relating to any type of health of wildlife. You know, their hunters are doing massive amounts out of their own, I always say out of their own time and dime, massive amounts for all wildlife. And we're even supporting wolves because of it. Well, my problem here is that the data, while yes, you might say the data on wolves says, when wolf numbers are up, deer numbers are up, so hunter success is up. You might say that's macro, but if a pack of wolves, 4.5 wolves, according to Tom Gable at the Voyager Wolf Project, if 4 or 5 wolves roll into my 80 acres because I did all the work and the deer show up in the fall, if they roll in and find prey, why are you now telling me that is the one moment in time, the one problem for my investment that I am not allowed to manage? You know, that's government overreach.
Yeah.
Right. You know, that's taking the power away from the citizen, you know, I understand, well, wolves are, we're always going to have them. You know, we can't possibly get rid of them all. You know, when we were trying to get rid of them all, when we had federal bounties, when we were, you know, there were no rules, you know, they were bring in a wolf hide and you got paid for it. You know, like when they had federal trappers assigned to just killing wolves, Minnesota still had 1,000 wolves. Like when we were trying to eliminate them. So we can't get rid of them. And I even asked Tom, I just said, okay, so let's say these things get delisted again for the 5th time. And you know, they're not able to find a judge in California that will do a nationwide injunction and say, no, you can't delist wolves. You know, let's just say that that happens and we actually get to have a season again. How many could we actually take out of the entire population to, like, where we're never going to be able to get rid of wolves? So wolves will exist, people will exist, but a guy on an 80, like I was explaining, he still gets to influence positively his deer herd, because we know that when we hunt them or when we trap them, wolves leave. Like, they know when they're pressured, just like deer do. They go somewhere where it's easier and where there's less, you know, danger around. They do move on. So what, how many could we kill? And he said, you know, Jake, according to the, and this is just data, but every year wolf packs have roughly 5 pups and roughly half of them survive. So that's your average pack size of 4.5. So you could kill half of the wolves and you'd be right back to normal the next year. And that bears it out, because I looked at the, you know, the states where we are hunting and trapping wolves on purpose. And we're actually, some state agencies are actually getting rid of wolves, or trying to, in some of the zones where elk are decimated out in Idaho. They are on purpose killing half of the wolves. Yeah. And they still have wolves and they still have a very successful season. So, you know, in my mind, I don't think we, especially in Minnesota, with all of the public acres we have that are completely unmanaged, you know, no people around, vast expanses of wilderness where people just aren't, they're never going to manage wolves in those areas. And then you're also going to have some homeowners that just choose not to. They like having wolves around, you know, they enjoy the hearing them. And, you know, some people like wolves, that's fine. We're never going to be able to get rid of them. So I personally, my personal opinion, knowing the data and knowing that we have coyotes, even though in Minnesota, especially, we have no rules on coyotes, none. So there's no fur bearer trapping season for coyotes. If we see a coyote and we don't want it on our property, at any time we can trap, snare, hunt, use lights at night, you know, yep. You know what I mean? Like, yep. Any time of the year we can take a coyote. And we still have coyotes because they are canines and they are smart. Yep. And they know when they can come and when they, you know, have danger, and they're going to breed like coyotes, and wolves are going to breed like wolves, and they're not that much different. So personally, I don't even pound my fist and demand a wolf season. I'm saying my position is we don't need a season. We don't need any rules except for what is, you know, sportsmanlike. Like, obviously we can't use poison anymore. We don't use poison to take coyotes, but when I have a breeding pack of coyotes on my deer hunting property and my turkey hunting property, I on purpose trap the coyotes because I want more of the turkey and the deer. And you know what? The coyotes will be back. They always are. But during that time of year when my fawns are dropping, and during that time of year when I have hens nesting, I am going to put in 6 weeks hard of coyote hunting and snaring, possum, raccoon, skunk trapping. I'm going to do that because, you know, that's when it matters. And obviously we see the results, and, you know, the data proves it out that if you can get after predators when it's nesting and fawning time, you do help your herd. So, you know, as far as the wolf issue goes, I kind of stay out of it, but, you know, at the same time, you sort of, when you're Habitat Pro and you're doing all this stuff for deer, you kind of have to take a position on it. My position is that, you know, just like every other, I guess, philosophy I have is less government is better. And since we cannot get rid of wolves, even when we were trying, I don't really feel like in this instant, it's any different. I think wolves are going to exist, but you need to give autonomy to the landowner that bought his land for deer and has to manage everything on that property on his time and dime for the most part. You know, he can manage buckthorn at any time he wants. He doesn't have to ask for permission. He can manage coyotes. He can manage a beaver. I mean, in the rules of the land, but you know, he can manage his property, and I don't think wolves should be any different, because we're going to have them. We're not going to giving that freedom to a landowner is not going to eliminate wolves. That's my position on that.
Yeah, I understand. And I know there's the rub, there's always the rub around human presence in regards to the decision-making of how to properly manage a population. So to your point earlier, some of the data is, I think, relevant. In New York State specifically, we have limited season for coyotes, which is one of our largest predators, particularly of fawns. Mm-hmm. Although black bears are pretty significant in a lot of the areas as well. We have a limited season, and that limited season doesn't allow for overlap of, you know, when the coyote post-gestation period is. So we are hurting ourselves in some aspect of it. In regards, I want to be real brief on this because there's a bunch of topics I want to get to with you. In regards to just design and layout, and it's the yep. same thing with coyotes. A lot of times with coyotes, I limit coarse movement on the landscape. I can use mm-hmm. brush to make fencing, thick shrubs or thickets and dense shrub thickets, fallen logs, tons of debris. And I use debris to my benefit. And the way I construct the trails and overlap of trails, it limits coarse movement on the landscape. That has been my key to success. And there's a total way to do it. It's hard to explain on this podcast specifically, but that's the gist of how I've managed coyotes, particularly on my properties. And what coyotes don't like a lot of times is really dense grass. I have found that they work the edges of those areas, but they will not penetrate dense grasses. So again, mm-hmm. switchgrass being a physical barrier to some of these animals, including deer, by the way, you know, can be a benefit to kind of controlling movement on the landscape. Wolves are much larger, and they have coarse movement. So what would be a general, right. just quick, you know, how do we disrupt their pack behavior or just their movement sure. on the landscape?
Well, you know, one of the things that I really appreciate about, you know, I follow a lot of Craig Harper's stuff. He does a lot of great research for us out of the University of Tennessee, and it's posted a lot by the National Deer Association. He just did a study on FSI TSI hinge cutting
yep.
areas, where he took two separate places, 10 acres each, and they ran cameras on the 10 acres in each spot for an entire season, counted up every animal that appeared, you know, did all the pre-data on the controls. And then they took 5 acres out of each one of those 10 acre blocks, and they did a complete hinge cut, FSI herbicide, you know, they girdled and sprayed some of it. They hinge cut some of it. You know, all they did was dropped trash. Basically, they got sunlight in there with girdle and spray, and they hinge cut trees on purpose just for deer, just for bedding, just to get trash on the ground. That's it. Just to knock down sight lines, make it annoying, you know, like just to do things the way deer wanted to do. So we did that in 2 separate 5-acre blocks, and then they ran the cameras again, same grid system, counted all the stuff. What was valid for me out of that, and what actually surprised the researchers, because shocker, you know, everybody can argue against hinge cutting all they want, but shocker, when actually Craig Harper took his team and put the data to it, deer love it.
Oh, okay,
so shocker. you put stuff on the ground and deer love it. Okay, but what they were surprised at was that coyote sightings on those cameras in those 5-acre bedding blocks dropped 40%. So to your point,
yep.
making it thicker, coyotes are lazy, right? They're just looking for that easy calorie. I got to eat today, so where are my easy calories? And they don't care if it's a red squirrel or, you know, and that's the same with wolves, right? They're just canines. They're going to run where it's easy to run. You know, we've got studies in northern Minnesota showing that putting in logging roads helps wolves and does, you know, helps them become successful predators. You know, the more roads and big trails you put in, the easier wolves have it, because they find areas that are easy to surround. And then obviously all they got to do is get deer up and running, and then they sight hunt them. So, you know, that while Dr. Harper's study was not directly related to wolves, it's directly related to how canines do their business. And just yeah. because coyotes are smaller doesn't mean it doesn't apply to wolves. So therefore, what, you know, what I've experienced in my 10 or so years building properties in northern Minnesota and Wisconsin, the bigger the thick areas that we make for deer, the tougher wolves have it. And knowing the Voyager Wolf Project data that says, hey, we keep track of 7 to 9 packs every year. We've got 4 to 5 wolves in a pack, depending on, wolf pup mortality. In my head, I'm designing a food plot or screening or a bedding area or a timber harvest with that in mind. How big should this area be so that 3 wolves can't surround it on the exit side and 2 wolves can't, when 2 wolves push it out? If I've got 5 wolves, how do I put cards back in the deer's favor? Yeah. Right. So that's what's always in my head, and where you're saying you're thinking coyotes, and we can't write off coyotes. There's a lot of guys that listen to somebody say, oh yeah, I got to get out and shoot my coyotes. And somebody always chimes in on social media, coyotes can't kill deer. And we've got studies that show deer hair is in coyote scat, number one, all year, 12 months of the year, deer hair in coyote scat is the number one hair. So, and they don't have, the common, that study, trimmed out roadkill as a possible thing, but because in their scat, they don't have the commonly road killed animals typically. So they kind of weeded that out. So we know that coyotes are killing deer. They're good at it. They probably take longer and aren't as successful as wolves, but they're dogging deer all the time. I mean, if they find deer, they basically, they put on their canine hunt and they try their hardest, and sometimes they get them 12 months of the year. So if you do have coyotes, they are killing your deer. Who knows how many, but they are.
Yeah, no doubt.
And, yep. To go back to the wolf thing, that's all we're trying to do is we're trying to say, how can I put a little bit more in my deer's favor? And unfortunately, the best thing for a wolf pack is to have moderately or fully mature timber that they can push a nice small bedding area, like a 1-2 acre bedding area. If 5 wolves can push that out and push deer into the open ridge top that is directly adjacent to it, because some guy, saw a video and it said, oh yeah, your bedding areas can be as small as you want them or as big as you want them. You can do a half acre hinge cut and a half acre hinge cut, all you're doing is setting a dinner table for 4 or 5 wolves. That's all you're doing. Because all they're going to do is send one wolf through it, push it out, and then 3 wolves are going to sight hunt anything that comes running out of there through the open timber. So you have to kind of have that realization of how wolves are going to do their business, how they want to easily search for deer, just running, just like a bird dog does. They just like a coyote does, they want to course through somewhat open timber and smell as much as they can. And as soon as they smell something, they try to get a little closer to it and get it up and moving and see what happens. It's not really rocket science, So that's kind of as good as we can do for wolves. And there's a lot of guys that have their own philosophies of, I don't care what the government says, I'm going to manage, there's hundreds of wolves dying every year in northern Minnesota and northern Wisconsin. I guarantee it. It's like, I know what happens, but at this point we aren't legally allowed to do it. And most guys they do things legal, I can't attach that to Habitat Pro any more than you can attach killing wolves to whitetail landscapes. Right. So
yeah.
It's not like we can go out, even though we know it would help deer herd. It's not like we can go out and manage wolves for a client. We can't do that. So, most people follow the law and, but there are things that you can do in your habitat management that make it more difficult for 4 to 5 canines to really be effective. And while they're going to learn just as we learn where the pinches are, wolves are good at that just like we are. If we build a property to have multiple exits to food plots, multiple exits to bedding areas, larger bedding areas to search where wolves can't coordinate. You know, that is how we have to do things differently in, you know, up north where wolves are going to be a thing, you know, and we're never going to be able to get rid of them.
And one thing I want to add to this for the coyote folks, the people mostly in the east that don't have to deal with the wolf situation, you know, we want to create the tangle. That's the term that I use with the clients, basically fillers in the understory. So everyone knows one of my favorite plants is chokecherry. I love chokecherry. I've always loved chokecherry.
Oh, yeah, I love it.
Yeah, it's like my favorite plant. Anyhow, but looking at for those fillers, you know, we're looking for kind of those shrub bramble combination in clumps and sections to eliminate that coarse movement for coyotes. And that's really successful. I would argue, based on my property, what I've seen is if they say a 40% reduction based on, you know, some standardization of cutting and felling and hinge cutting trees, I would say I'm in the 70 to 80% withdrawal of coyotes on my particular property. So it can be done. You just have to know how to lay out a property in order to do that. Jake, I want to flip over to a couple things, and I had a couple questions for you, but I'm going to skip those. I want to go to the point you and I were talking before this, elevated ponds, elevated water sources. A big important topic that I think is overlooked, something that you're cluing in on, I'm cluing on, I'm trying to add more of those to the landscape. A lot of it's for water distribution purposes, particularly in these dryland areas. But what are you using them for? Where are you putting them? What are the things you're thinking about? And why are you even concentrating on those? Hi, everybody. That's part one. In part two, we're going to talk more about elevated ponds, where we place them, how we build them, how we approach ponds in the landscapes. We're going to also get into the topic of berms, building berms, the relative location, different forms on the landscape, some landform management discussions, and doing the work. Hopefully you enjoyed part one. Part two will be out next week. Thanks for listening.
Maximize Your Hunt is a production of Whitetail Landscapes. For more information on how John Teeter and his team of experts can help you maximize your hunt, check out WhitetailLandscapes.com.
Two Good & Co. coffee creamers are made with farm-fresh cream, real milk, and contain 3 grams of sugar per serving. That's 40% less than the 5 grams per serving in leading traditional coffee creamers for a rich, delicious experience. Whether you enjoy your coffee hot, cold, bold, or frothy, Two Good coffee creamers make every sip a good one. Two Good coffee creamers, real goodness in every sip. Find them at your local Kroger in the creamer aisle.
Close your eyes, exhale, feel your body relax, and let go of whatever you're carrying today.
Well, I'm letting go of the worry that I wouldn't get my new contacts in time for this class. I got them delivered free from 1-800-CONTACTS. Oh my gosh, they're so fast.
And breathe.
Oh, sorry. I almost couldn't breathe when I saw the discount they gave me on my first order. Oh, sorry. Namaste.
Visit 1-800-CONTACTS.com today to save on your first order.
1-800-CONTACTS.
New year, new me? Cute. But how about new year, new money? With Experian, you can actually take control of your finances. Check your FICO score, find ways to save, and get matched with credit card offers, giving you time to power through those New Year's goals you know you're going to crush. Start the year off right. Download the Experian app. Based on FICO scoring model. Offers and approval not guaranteed. Eligibility requirements and terms apply. Subject to credit check, which may impact your credit scores. Offers not available in all states. See Experian.com for details. Experian.
It's tax season, and at LifeLock, we know you're tired of numbers. But here's a big one you need to hear. Billions. That's the amount of money in refunds the IRS has flagged for possible identity fraud. Now here's another big number. 100 million. That's how many data points LifeLock monitors every second. If your identity is stolen, we'll fix it guaranteed. One last big number. Save up to 40% your first year. Visit LifeLock.com/podcast for the threats you can't control. Terms apply.
Ready to relax in your dream bath retreat without the stress of figuring out every detail yourself? At the Home Depot, your bath upgrade is covered. Shop fully designed rooms and curated bath collections to go from inspiration to transformation fast. Savings of up to 40% will make it easier on your budget. And find everything you need, from tubs to toilets and all the tile in between, to bring your vision to life. The Home Depot. Dream baths built here.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network. And this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries.
For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.